All right, so we have a lot of things to talk about here today. We're going to cover some of the new .NET backends for Azure Mobile Services. We're going to go into details on the offline support and the alternative data stores. I'm Philip Ekberg. I'm a senior consultant at Redify. I'm also a mobility technology specialist. Feel free to harass me on Twitter or email if you have any questions at all. So judging by my name, you can probably think that I'm from Scandinavia. I'm more precisely from a small town called Halmstad in southern Sweden. Growing up pretty close to IKEA, the headquarters of IKEA, judging by Australian distances, that's probably a bike ride away. It's 45 minutes by car for us. So growing up so close to IKEA, I've come to master the techniques of building the IKEA Billy bookshelves. So if you have any questions in regards of Azure Mobile Services or why there's always one screw left when you've built your IKEA furniture, please feel free to ask that as well. I'm also a C# MVP, so if you have any questions in regards of C#, that's totally fine. We have a packed agenda for the day. We're going to go over a lot of interesting changes to Azure Mobile Services. We're going to go over a quick recap of what Mobile Services is and what we've seen come up until today. And then we're going to jump right into looking at the .NET backend for Azure Mobile Services. Then we're going to step away from the backend of everything and look at what can we introduce in the client to cater all the different connectivity patterns. And after that, we're going to take a look at the alternative data stores. So how many of you in here are Azure Mobile Service experts or have tinkered with it for a bit? Just a few? So how many of you have not seen it, anything at all in regards to Azure Mobile Services? Wow, that's cool. So how many of you can't even be bothered to raise your hands? Because that wasn't 100% of all the people in here. So Azure Mobile Services, a quick recap of a couple of minutes. It's a scalable backend in the cloud. That means it runs in Azure, it's backed by Node.js, and it provides a dynamic data schema. Now this means that we can introduce a powerful, scalable, and reliable backend for our data. And then we can take this data and cater all different platforms that are supported by mobile services. We can use iOS devices, Android devices, .NET, and we get a REST API. So we get a nice cross-platform capability of reaching all these devices using a nice scalable backend. We also get push notifications. So we get push notifications for Windows Store, so we can get this nice live tile coming up in our store applications. We get Windows Phone push notifications, Android notifications, and iOS notifications. And we also get authentication and authorization. So I imagine a lot of you want to be able to log in to your devices using your Microsoft account, Active Directory, Twitter, Facebook, or Google. So Azure Mobile Services provides us with the capabilities of creating our backend, having it stored in the cloud, making it scalable and reliable. It also provides us with the capability of taking our data to a wide range of different devices. And then we can get these push notifications and authorization authentication to create really powerful cross-platform experiences. So I saw a few of you having worked with the Azure Mobile Services before. Have any of you seen the Node.js backend? Just a couple. So I imagine that a few of you like to work with this, a few of you like to work with Node.js in general, but the Node.js backend in Azure doesn't give us the first-class experience when it comes to debugging. So I'm saying no to this console logging debugging experience. I don't want to do console log every time I want to debug my application. So I'm going to introduce you to the .NET backend for mobile services. Now the .NET backend for mobile services means that we are providing a powerful backend with web API. So I'm guessing more of you have probably seen the web APIs from before. And what this means in the terms of Azure Mobile Services is that Azure takes our controllers and everything around that, hosts that in Azure, and takes care of all the pieces around our controllers. So it's really sort of a platform as a service on steroids. We can bring our own controllers. We don't have to be limited to the Azure Mobile Services pieces of these controllers, which we'll take a look at later on. We can also bring old web API controllers that we've had since before. So thinking about this for a second, if we can take our existing web API controllers, we can incorporate everything we love about web API. We can filter data before it's sent to the clients. We can add things like the authorization attribute to our controllers. And we can host this anywhere. Now, I don't really see a reason why we wouldn't want to host this in Azure, since that gives us the best scalable and reliable backend. But if we have a cloud in our basement, that's fine as well. And we can still integrate from all these different platforms. We can integrate from our iOS, Android, Windows Store, and Windows Phone applications, and we still get this cross-platform experience. We have the same contracts and APIs that we've seen before, so we can use the mobile service client to connect to our either Node.js backend or our Web API backend. To us, it's just exposing JSON data. And I want a first-class experience when it comes to debugging. Being able to run this locally, put up breakpoints, debug this, that's an experience that .NET developers are quite keen on getting. And we get that with the .NET backends for Azure Mobile Services. So we can publish this to the cloud. We can attach a debugger to the instance running in the cloud and debug that locally and have it run in the cloud. That's pretty cool. So let's have a look at how we can build one of these backends. I'm going to show you how to set up this project, publish it to the cloud, and then attach this debugger. So I have an application here. It's a pretty simple application. You'll see here that we have a normal web project. And in this web project, we have a to-do item controller and a to-do item. If you've tinkered with the Azure Mobile Services before, the to-do item is something that quite often comes up. So I'm going to take this into the .NET backends of Azure Mobile Services as well. All I've done to create this is to go up to New Project. And I've told this to create a new cloud Azure Mobile Service project. What this does, it lets me specify if I want to host this in the cloud or if I want to host this locally. It also lets me set up different data stores. Now, I'm not going to bother you with creating that because I've already done that. What I will show you is how we set up this to run locally and in the cloud. So I have something here called the to-do item. My to-do item inherits from entity data. Entity data specifies the ID, updated at, created at, and the version that we generally want to have stored in our Azure Mobile Service. So this here is provided by our Azure Mobile Service, and now we want to take this entity and expose this over my new Web API backend. So I'll head over to my to-do item controller. And we'll see here that we have a few things that are different from our normal Web API controllers. We have something here called the table controller. The table controller, in its turn, inherits from the API controller. This means that it's taking care of a few things for us in the backend. I'm saying here that I have a table controller for the to-do item. Now, the table controller knows how to translate my to-do item and make it compatible with the Azure Mobile Service client. And then what we'll see here is that we are setting up a mobile service context. If I head over to that, you'll see that this is just a normal DB context. I'm connecting to a database using NNE framework. Now, that database that I'm connecting to, it's doing the same thing that the Node.js backend did before. It's setting up all the data. It's making all this work for us. Then we have something new here called the domain manager. The domain manager in this case is an entity domain manager, and it's hooked up to our database context. What the domain manager is in charge of is handling all the data operations. It handles the creating, the lookups, and fetching of all our items. Then you'll see here afterwards we have all the get all to-do items. We can fetch one to-do item and so forth. And this is just normal actions that we've probably seen when working with Web API. So if I go ahead and compile this, I'll set a breakpoint in this method here. I'll tell this to run. Once this is done compiling, there we go. Now this will host my mobile service locally. There we go, that's awesome. And we can get our data by going to slash tables, slash to-do items. And you saw that is hitting the breakpoints. Might have been too quick. There we go. So now we should get the data returned from our local database. Now I'll prove to you that this is actually running locally by going into the web project, and I'll expand the data, the app data folder here. And you'll see that there's a database created in here. And if I attach that and explore that in Visual Studio, we'll be able to see the tables. And we have a to-do item table here. And we can show all the data and see that we have the same data in here that we just saw exposed over our mobile service. So that's all cool, but let's introduce a client as well. I want to connect to this using the mobile service client that we've been using and seen before. So I've created a project up here. It's a universal application, so I'm targeting Windows Store and Windows Phone devices. We'll just be running this on Windows as a Windows Store application for now. But if we take a look at the main page here, we'll see that we have a couple of familiar things. We have an iMobile service table. This is what is defining that we're going to work with our to-do item table. We can use that to fetch data, to push data, to insert data, to update data. And then we have our collection that we're binding to in our UI. Now this is all doing a connection by using this mobile service client here. So we're telling the mobile service client to connect to our local instance. I could uncomment this code up here and say that I want to connect to my mobile service hosted in the cloud. So let's run the client application and have a look at what this looks like. It'll go off to my mobile service running locally. It'll fetch all the data. Hopefully we'll see a list of our items in here. And I can go ahead and add new items. And save that, and now we'll see this being added to our local database. If we go ahead here and refresh the data that we have in here, we should have a new item saying hello there ticket. So this is a nice way for us to develop, debug, and run our mobile services locally. That's all good. Now I have my mobile service created and I want to expose this to all my friends. So I want to publish this to the cloud. You can go ahead and right click on my web project and select publish. And this will do a web deploy. So I've selected to create a new publishing target for Azure Mobile Services. That lets me select a pre-existing mobile service or I can create a new one. I have all my connection information. I've set it to deploy this in debug mode. That means that I'll be able to connect to my instance running in Azure. So I've already published that. And if I expand the Azure tab up here, hopefully we'll see that under the mobile service tab, we have our mobile service running in Azure. Once it's done refreshing, we see the mobile service here, and I can right-click and attach a debugger. So that's the IIS instance running in Azure. I can connect to that with my Visual Studio instance and sync with the PDB file that is deployed to Azure. So I've already done that. I've already hooked that up. So all the symbols are loaded because it takes some time to do that. So this instance here are hooked up to my Azure instance. So if I go ahead and go into my browser here, and I'll prove to you that this is Azure. I promise I haven't updated my host file to point locally. This is pointing to my Azure instance. If I go ahead and run that there, I'm hitting the debugger inside Visual Studio. That's pretty cool. And I'm doing this over a 4G network. Imagine if I were doing this on a stable home internet connection. The experience is much better than debugging the Node.js backend. And we'll see here that it returns the data. It's different data from the one that I have locally, so you'll have to trust me that this is running in Azure. So in summary, we saw that it's pretty easy for us to create this .NET backend. It's pretty easy for us to define these controllers that connect to our mobile service tables. It's very easy for us to debug this locally. It's easy for us to deploy this and run it in Azure. Now I want to talk about going offline. offline needs to be a first-class experience in our applications. There's a lot of talk about that all devices are now connected to the internet, all devices send us data all the time, but we need to think about the people and the devices that aren't always connected. So I want to tell you guys a little story. So when I arrived in Australia a bit over a year ago with my soon-to-be wife, the first thing that we did in Sydney was running around everywhere looking for a fast, reliable, and good mobile carrier. Now, after realizing that there's no such thing in Australia, we went for the second best thing. We went for the one giving us the most data for the buck. Given that having a lot of data to your disposal doesn't mean anything if you can't use it because there's no coverage, we didn't really think about that. Living in Sydney, you have pretty good coverage. But as time went on, we were planning to go on a trip. We flew up to Cairns, rented a car, and drove down to Gold Coast. This was over a 10-day period with my fiance and her parents. I can tell you, spending 10 days in a car with your fiance and her parents, that's an interesting achievement alone. However, I'm still alive. Although we were four social media addicts in the car, which is a different experience. All of us wanted to access the internet. All of us wanted to upload pictures, tag ourselves, tell our friends what we were up to. We all love those friends, right? The people that always update their pictures of what they're doing on their vacation. So this experience had me thinking. I wouldn't be able to use my applications even though I'm not in a 4G spot. I wouldn't be able to upload my pictures even without being having internet access. So how can we cater for that? Now, being on the road, I wanted to take a picture, tag my family, tell my Facebook application to upload this. Instead of getting an error thrown in my face saying, sorry, you don't have connection, you can try in later. It could have told me that, let's add this to a queue and fix this whenever you have access to internet. Now, it's quite interesting, right? Because we don't see many applications doing this. Facebook doesn't do it. They solve it in a quite different way. They solve it in the manner of letting you change the date later on. If you upload a picture, you can say, I took this picture 10 days ago. I had these friends with me. I took it at this place. That's interesting. However, if more developers around the world thought about us poor souls wanting to go on road trips where there's no connection, we're thinking about us not being able to access good coverage, maybe we could get a better offline connectivity experience. Especially countries outside Australia, looking at Europe and USA, they have very good coverage in the bigger cities. And they're spoiled with good internet connection. Back in Sweden, everyone has 100 megabit fiber, almost gigabit fiber right now. It's pretty insane, right? Now, if these developers think about us needing to be able to use their applications offline, maybe we could get a different experience. So let's talk about the different connectivity patterns. We have people that are always connected. They're connected to high-speed internet. Maybe they're using Wi-Fi. They're using their 100 megabit fiber. And then we have the people that are always connected, but they're on a mobile network. They're using 3G or 4G. It's still pretty good. They don't have to think too much about their usage. And then we have the people that are occasionally connected. Might be people on 2G connections, people working out in the mines, or people working on a daily basis somewhere where there's no access to internet. But when they get home, they have their Wi-Fi, they can sync all their data then. Then we have the people that are barely connected at all. People on airplanes that travel a lot, people working in the farms, people that go on road trips all the time. Now it's interesting to see how these different types of people use applications differently. We need to cater for all these different connectivity patterns. And we need to think about, sure, there's devices that are always connected, but there's also devices that are barely connected at all. And we can't just tell these users that, sorry, you can't use my applications until you're in a good 4G spot. We're going to miss out on a lot of users for our devices. Think about this for a second. How can we think outside of the box when it comes to providing our users with a good offline experience? If we have an application that is meant to be online only, can we somehow make it capable to use offline as well? Take Spotify, for example. They're by definition a streaming service, which means that they're online only. However, they've introduced an offline support to bring your playlists and bring your songs offline for a certain amount of days until your data is invalidated. That's also a Swedish company, by the way, which is awesome. And we need to think about delivering data costs money, especially in Australia. Getting access to a good 4G connection that delivers a lot of data, it's quite expensive. And we even have caps on our home internet connections. That's not really the normal outside of Australia. We're starting to see this trend in some more countries where they're trying to cap the data. So we need to think about delivering this type of data might cost money. Do we need to think about how much data we send to our end users and when we send it? Can we let the user decide when to pull down data and when to push data? So we need a good way to manage offline data, because it's quite obvious that we want to cater for these types of people. How many in here have rolled their own offline synchronization or offline store? A few of you. I know that I have, especially when creating cross-platform applications. You're introducing local databases on the devices. You're trying people to get your data. And I was fortunate enough to only work with pulling down data. If you need to push data from each device and handle synchronization problems, you're in a different game. So the first problem is, where do we store the data? And the second problem is, of course, if one person modifies data, if one person adds data or deletes data, and a certain other user does something else to the same data, how do we handle that collision? So with Azure Mobile Services, we're getting out-of-the-box support for SQLite. Now, for those of you that don't know what SQLite is, it's a self-contained, serverless, configurationless, and transactional database. That means that it's a file-based database. The only thing we need is a .NET library, a NuGet package that we pull into our project to connect to this database, which is pretty insane. It's pretty cool. Now, SQLite is supported on such a wide variety of different devices. It's supported on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, and Windows Store, which means that it's supported on all the platforms where we have mobile service support. So mobile service is giving us a nice way to work with SQLite. So we need a good way to synchronize the data. We need to keep the data up to sync with the server. The local version needs to be somewhat in sync with the other people using our application, with all the problems that comes with that. So we need to think about, when do we sync the data? Do we sync the data each time the user gets a connection? Imagine me driving down the coastline of Queensland, going from Cairns to Gold Coast. Imagine how many times it cut off my internet connection. What if it tried to upload a 10 megabyte file and it just went halfway, like 10 times of the trip? All my data would be used up. That's not a good experience. So remember these different connectivity patterns. We have the barely connected people. They might want to be able to decide when they sync their data. They might want a button to say, sync the data now. I want to do that when I get home. And then we have the always connected people. They don't want to be bothered by syncing their data. They just want that to seamlessly happen in the backend. Something like, when I get connection or whenever, just sync the data. And of course, we have the concurrency problems. We need to be able to handle concurrency. I'm guessing a lot of you guys that have been working with concurrency problems just love it. So let me tell you another story. Imagine that when I was on this trip, my boss sends me a text message saying, we have an urgent problem. You need to fix this right away. Now, being on the road in the wilderness of Queensland, not really thinking about I don't have access to a good 4G connection, I just did the update on my device. I saved it and just hoped for it to be synced. So while running away from all the crocodiles, a few hours went by. I found a good 4G spot. My data was synced. However, I'm prompted with a message telling me there was a synchronization problem. So we all know that when we get this message from our boss, you're not the only one getting that message. So this message was sent to the entire team. And of course, the first one fixing the problem gets the nicer Christmas gift. So now I had two problems. I was still afraid of all the crocodiles, and I had a synchronization problem, which could probably get me fired. I don't know which is worse. So who wins in a collision? We have this group of people working on our data. They're working on their data offline, and then we bring in another set of people working on their data offline. It's essentially the same data. They're getting it from the same place, but they're both working with this offline. Now they want to store this in the server, and they want to push their changes. How do we weigh who wins this collision? We can't forget about our friends in the wilderness working with their data offline. So do we take the last one? Do we take the first one? It's a tough decision. In this case, we just randomly select one and tell them that it didn't work. So we can introduce a couple of concurrency strategies. In case of mobile service, we get a lot of help doing this, which we'll discover when we take a look at the next demo. We could just override all the changes. Whenever someone pushes something, we'll let them win, but that's not really the best strategy. I want to be an optimist. Pessimistic concurrency means that I need to pre-lock my data. Does anyone remember the times when you checked out your files in source control and didn't let anyone else work on the files at the same time? Let's not do that anymore. So I don't say no locks. We don't want to lock our data. We want to be optimists. We want to let our users work on the data and then solve problems in the future if there are any. And I want to be notified if there's a problem. If I get a synchronization problem, tell me about it. Just don't fail. Just tell me that there is a problem. And we can ask the user, how do you want to proceed? How do you want to solve this problem? Do you want to take the server version or do you want to take the local version? And we all know that when we get this prompt asking which version to take, everyone takes the local version. And we can also do advanced conflict resolution. How about we have the same data, the last name changed on one place, and the address changed on the other place. Can we take the data and sync that instead and merge the data? We're not going to take a look at how we can merge the data here today, but it's a good strategy to have in mind. So let's take a look at how we can bring our data offline. I want to take our application that we just saw that pulls down all the to-do items. We're going to use the same Azure Mobile Service running locally, and we're going to take the data that's coming from the Azure Mobile Service and store that locally. Now, before we do that, I just want to tell you that when working with SQLite, you need to install an extension in Visual Studio, which brings in the pre-compiled binaries when you publish this. So that's something to just keep in mind. Just need to find the right button. There we go. So this is the same solution that we saw just a moment ago, and I'm going to start off the Azure Mobile Service so it runs locally. It's running on different ports so we don't get any concurrency problems. So the first thing that I need to do is tell my application that instead of pulling down the data each time that we ask the to-do table to pull down the data, I'm going to say that we're going to synchronize this data. And that means that we're bringing in something called a synchronization context. And the way that we do that is by simply saying that instead of having a iMobile service table, I'm using an iMobile service sync table. Easy as that, done. Not really. We also need to change the get table to get sync table. Now when we're invoking to-do table, it's trying to find a synchronization context inside our application. It's trying to find a data store for our application. So we need a way to set that up. And in my onNavigatedTo method, what we did previously was that we have a simple method for refreshing data. Now the refreshToDoItems method also lives in this file here. And what this does is that it's simply saying, fetch all of the items from my to-do table. So what I want to do now is tell this to, before you fetch that, set up a local synchronization store or a synchronization context and sync everything to that. So I'm going to get rid of my onNavigatedTo. I'm going to bring in a new one here with a few changes. So you'll see here that we have a couple of new things in here. We still have our refresh to-do items at the bottom here, but at the top here we're saying, is the synchronization context initialized? We're checking if there's already a local database set up. If it's not, we're setting that up. We're saying that we have a mobile service SQLite store. This is where we're going to store our data locally. We're defining our to-do table. So it knows how to build up this table. It knows what properties goes in there and what columns to add. And then we're saying initialize this synchronization context. We have this store that we were using, and we have this synchronization handler. Now this last part here might indicate that we can introduce our own synchronization handler. The synchronization handler is used to spot synchronization problems. We'll get to that in a second. Let me just change this here so it doesn't collide with any pre-installed apps that I might have on my machine. There's one more change that we need to do. So far, our to-do item has only been pulling down the first name and the last name. I'm just going to that. Sorry, it's the to-do item brings in the text and the completed field and the ID. There's one more field that we need to introduce here. So how do we know that the local version is not the same or is the same as the server version? We need to specify just that. We need to say that we have a version on our to-do item as well. So remember, the entity data on our server has the version on it. In this case, we're bringing that over to the client as well. So just giving you a quick look of what the main page SAML file looks like, I've introduced one new thing in here. So at the bottom here, you'll see that I have something called a page button bar. This introduces a refresh button. And when this is clicked, I want to pull down the data. If there's any data changed locally, I want to push that first. And the way that I'm doing that is because it is going in the code behind. You could use an MVVM pattern, but that's just confusing for now. So I'm going to push this, and I want to sync this. So this is my sync click handler. Now, the first thing that we're doing, as I mentioned, we're pushing the data. And then we're saying that the to-do table needs to pull down the new data that possibly lives in our mobile service. Notice how the to-do table.pull async uses the table to pull down the data. Would you imagine that pushing the data looks the same? It actually doesn't. So we're using the synchronization context to push all our data. And the reason that we're doing that is on other places inside our applications. So my applications has an edit page. So I might have this table defined on more than one place inside my application, which means that I need to push all the different places where I've used my my synchronization context. And if I have other tables as well, we want to push all of them. But we want to be able to be selective about the pulls. So let's compile this application. I'm going to set this as a startup project. And notice here that it's telling me that you need to specify a platform. SQLite does not allow us to do any CPU. So we need to be explicit about that we're compiling this for x86 or x64. So we're going to build that. Going to deploy this if Visual Studio allows me. Once that's deployed, I'm going to run this and show you that we have no data at all. So there's no data in here because there's nothing synced from the server. I'm going to right-click here and tell this to refresh the data. It's going to pull down all the data and put that in my SQLite store. So let's go ahead and change this item down here. This is to completed because I already greeted you guys. Now let's take a look what we have in our database. So this is the mobile service that is currently running. And I have my app data down here. And fetching all the data and the tables from that, we'll see that the data isn't pushed yet. So notice how greets ticket here only has one exclamation mark. Now if I go over to my application again, refresh that, you'll see that it's flickered, it's done. And if I refresh this here, it's added to the database. So let's change this in the database so we get a conflict. I want to change that back to this. And then I want to go into my store application again and change the same item. I just want two exclamation marks in here. I'm going to refresh this. And now we're giving an exception because we haven't defined the synchronization handler. So we need a way to fix these types of problems. And we can easily do that by introducing a custom sync handler. So I have a file here for specifying a sync handler. Let's go over this sync handler quickly and see what it's doing. I'm implementing an interface called iMobile Service Sync Handler, which gives me the capabilities of implementing a method called execute table operation async. This lets me execute the operations for pushing and pulling. And if there's a preconditioned failed exception, we know that something's not matching up. There's a difference between the local version and the remote version. We're prompting the user with a dialog asking, do you want to take the server version or the local version? Could probably just default that to the local version, as that's what we all choose anyways. So when we're showing this to the user, we're telling them, choose a version. If we choose the local version, what we're going to do is a bit tricky. We're going to say that, let's copy the version that we have on the server, the version number that is, and say that our local version has the same version number. That means that we're just overriding the server version with our new values. It's pretty neat. Otherwise, we're just returning the remote value and saying, take that, I don't care. So now that we have that defined, we need to go back and change our initialization here to say that we're using our new sync handler. If I rebuild this and redeploy it, then press F5 to run this, refresh again, we still probably have this synchronization problem. So by just introducing that, I can choose either the local version or the server version. And I'm going to choose the local version. And now we should have 2 exclamation marks or 3 in the server. We just refresh the data in here and see that we have more exclamation marks than we had in here. So it synced the data quite nicely. So now we saw that it's pretty easy for us to introduce offline support in our applications. We can just introduce SQLite and add the connections to SQLite and tell it to synchronize all our data. It's one simple change to our synchronization, to our mobile service tables, to make them synchronize. Sorry. So let's spend the rest of the time talking about the alternative data stores. The alternative data stores are very interesting. Imagine that you have an on-premises database. You already have your application built up. You didn't want to wait for the .NET backend in mobile services to build your web API and set up your databases. Imagine that you have this customer table with complex relations to different devices, and you're exposing this over a normal web API. Now you want to be a bit more selective to say that I just want to filter this and expose some of the fields. We can easily do that by introducing alternative data stores. So our on-premise solution that I'll show you later is a SQL Server running locally. There's a difference between the mobile service entity framework domain manager that I used before. That just sets up the backend for our mobile service. But now I want to connect to a pre-existing SQL Server and tell it to use that instead. And we want to take a pre-existing web API controller that is already exposing this data and host that side by side with our table controller. And we have a support for a wide range of different stores. We can use table storage, we can use SQL Server, we can use MongoDB, and we'll take a look at how we can use both SQL Server and MongoDB. In terms of SQL Server, to perform the mapping between what we have in our database, the entities that we have, and what we want to expose as a DTO over our mobile service, we need to perform this mapping somehow. I'm specifying this mapping by using AutoMapper. This makes it easy for me to just select a subset of data that I'm exposing over my mobile service. So let's take a look at how we can do that. I want to introduce offline support together with SQL Server and MongoDB. So I have 2 different scenarios. One where I have my MongoDB database. I want to connect to that and store my to-do items in a completely different type of database than SQL Server. And then I want to set up my SQL Server that is an on-premise solution that already has predefined data in it. So let's take a look at that. And when it comes to MongoDB and offline, there's a few changes that we need to be aware of. There's currently a few gotchas and bugs in the connectivity when it comes to offline support and MongoDB. But judging by all the updates to the NuGet packages, we're getting new NuGet packages all the time, and we're seeing that they're really working hard on making this to work really good. So I have this application here that we've seen a couple of times now. It's the to-do item controller, and if I just run this locally, you'll see that it works. It's connecting to my entity domain manager. It's using that in the backend. Now we want to change this to use MongoDB instead. The domain manager that we see here is in charge of working with the data. So if they've abstracted that and made it simple for us to just swap out the domain manager, hopefully that's an easy enough way for us to choose a different data store. So let's get rid of the mobile service context because we don't want to connect to our mobile to our SQL database anymore. Now let's bring in a MongoDB domain manager. It's easy as that. I'm just changing the domain manager, and that changes the backend completely. I'm specifying my connection string that I'm using. I'm specifying the database that I'm connecting to. I'm specifying the table. Zoom in on that. I'm specifying the table that I'm creating in Mongo. So what I've done is that I've gone ahead and went into my Azure portal. I've set up a new Mongo Labs account. It's a free MongoDB, and I'm just connecting to that. So I have a connection string that I need to add in my web config to make this work. And remember that I said we need to make a few changes to make the offline sync work as well. And I'll show you why here. Let's run this first, and I'll show you what kind of data I get back from my new mobile service. Before I do that, have you guys seen this page? If you go to /help, it'll show you all the different controllers and your API controllers that you have in your application. So you can do the, you can test the get, you can test the patch, post, and delete actions, which is pretty cool. However, I just want to go to /tables, /to-do item, and hopefully my internet connection is working. It fetches all these different items from MongoDB. Now, if you know what a GUID looks like, you know that this isn't a normal GUID from SQL Server. You see that this is an ID that we're using in MongoDB. So just to prove to you that this is from MongoDB, I have the data here. So we have this number here, 040C, whatever. And this says greets teched. Second item, there's four items here, in here. The second one says hello Mongo. And we can see here that that's exactly the same data we were getting here. It's pretty easy to get Mongo support in our application. But now I also want to be able to take this offline. If we didn't have offline in the picture, it would be very easy for us to just use this as it is. But now I want to introduce offline support. And that means that my local store needs to match whatever is stored on the server. So I need to tell my local store that the ID is a bit different. And I also need to tell it that currently the Mongo domain manager doesn't support certain operations. So I'm going to go ahead here to my share project in my universal application. I'm going to go to the code behind for my main page. I'm going to make a couple of changes in here. So I'm going to get rid of my onNavigatedTo method. And I'm going to take in a new one that has one change in it. It's this line here. I'm saying that currently my to-do table doesn't support any mobile service remote table options. That means that we don't support skipping items. We're not supporting top items. It just fetches all the data all the time. The second change I need to do is when I'm saving my item. So before, we just used normal insert to-do item, which inserts this in our to-do table. But now, as the ID generation is a bit different, I've just set up a method here to generate the ID for MongoDB. It's a 24-character hexadecimal number. So I'm saying here that when I create my to-do item, we need to generate the ID to support Mongo. So let's set the Windows project as a startup project. Tell this to run on any CPU. I'm going to rebuild this. And start it off, and hopefully we'll be getting some data from our MongoDB. There we go. Hello, Mongo. I can add a new item. And saving that does not store it in Mongo yet. I need to refresh the data to push this to the server. And now if I go ahead to Mongo again, you would see that this data is up to date. So finally, I want to show you the on-premises solution that I already have built here. So looking at this project, you'll see that we have a customer API controller. This customer API controller exposes an entity that I have created locally. It looks something like this here. So that customer has an ID, a name, last name, and some device is connected to it. Now, if I run this here, let's first take a look at what the data looks like when we're just fetching everything from our web API. This is hosted in the same type of project that I created my first mobile service in. So we can see here that we have Doctor Who here, he has a TARDIS. We have Mr. Bond, who doesn't have any devices. And we have Bill Gates down here. So now I want to connect to this service. I want to create my mapping between this complex model to expose something over my mobile service. Oops. And the way to do that is to define our customer DTO. So I'm defining something here that resembles what we push over our wire when it comes to mobile service. So we have the entity data here to define these common fields for ID, version, updated ad, and created ad. And I just want to expose the first name and last name. That's it. And just to show you the on-premise data context, it's simply telling us that we have customers, we have devices, there's a mapping between the customer and the device. That's pretty simple. Of course, our on-premises solution are mostly more complex than this, but this is a nice example. So now, in order for us to expose this over the wire, we need to do a couple of things. First of all, you might think that we can just use the entity domain manager to expose whatever we are connecting to using Entity Framework. But that would expose everything that we have in our database. So what we want to do is we want to create a mapping using AutoMapper. And that means that we need to create a custom domain manager. So I'm going to go over here to a file called Customer Domain Manager, or Custom Domain Manager. I'm going to take that in here and show you what this does. The first thing that you'll see on the top here is that we're inheriting from mapped entity domain manager. We're saying that we have a mapping between customer DTO and a customer. And then we are specifying a couple of methods here for querying, for looking up items, for updating, and for deleting items. Notice this line here looks a bit hacky. That's because there's a few gotchas in the mobile service domain managers, so we just need to do this to make it work with our model. And then notice one more thing here. So when we're storing this offline on the client, the ID is always seen as a string, but mobile service knows to generate a GUID. But in this case here, our complex model in the database is storing this as the data type GUID. So we need to say that we need to parse whatever we get from the mobile service. And when we're updating that, the types of these two items needs to match. So now we have the mapped entity domain manager defined. And we need to go ahead and specify the initialization method inside my controller. So of course, like we saw before, we're simply setting this domain manager. I'm saying that this is a customer domain manager. It's used for mapping between a customer and a customer DTO. Simple as that. And I'm creating a connection to my on-premises database. So we can compile this here. And I need to change this to x64. I'm going to rebuild this here. Now, when I run this here, I just want to start. Come on. While that's starting, I'll just show you the data that I have in my database. So the database that we have in here is, of course, resembling whatever we saw defining the mapping. So we have the customers, devices, and we can select all the customers in here. When that's done, we'll see that we get all the customers that we saw exposed before. So now I want to run this here. And when I go to tables/customer, hopefully we're getting an exception. And we are. It's telling us that it has no idea about the mapping between a customer and a customer DTO. So we haven't yet defined how to map the customer to the customer DTO. So we need to introduce AutoMapper to do just that. And the way that we are defining this mapping is by going into AppStart, to the web API config. I'm going to bring in my AutoMapper configuration. So notice here that we are creating a mapping from customer to customer DTO and the other way around. On one way, we're fetching data from the server, saying that I have a customer entity, we're converting this to a customer DTO. On the other hand, we're getting data pushed from the mobile service into our application, and then we need to convert it from a customer DTO to a customer. So I'm specifying the fields here that I want to map. I'm saying that I want to map the ID to whatever the ID.toString is. I want to map the first name, last name, and then the other way around as well. Now, if we recompile this here and run it again, we'll see that different data is exposed over our mobile service. There we go. I got Doctor Who and I got Bill Gates. Now I want to bring this into the client. So I've just made a few tweaks to the client to make it work with a customer instead of a to-do item. So our Windows Store application only has a few things to it. It lists all the customer, lets me add and update customers, and it stores them offline. So I'm incorporating all these different technologies and patterns that we've talked about. I'm using an on-premise database. I'm using offline in my application to cater all my different connectivity patterns and users. So let's refresh the data here. Hopefully we'll see Doctor Who and Bill Gates showing up here. I can go ahead and change Bill Gates to Bill G. And heading over to the database now, we shouldn't see this change reflected here yet because there's no synchronization happening. So heading over here again and just refreshing the data, this should update our database. And now what we have in our database is up to date with what we see in the client. That's pretty cool. So in summary, we brought in our on-premises solution, a complex solution using a complex relation. And I imagine your applications are much more complex than that, but we selectively choose a couple of things to expose over our mobile service. So we just use a subset of the data. We're letting the users use our mobile service and the mobile service client to perform updates and adds to our on-premises solution. And we saw that we can introduce MongoDB, which is a completely different backend store to SQL Server. So in summary, we've seen some really exciting things here. Azure Mobile Services just got a whole lot more powerful. Being able to build this locally, to debug this locally, to use on-premises things, it's really, really interesting and really powerful. And we can create these powerful backends using Web API. We've seen the table controllers, and we've seen bringing in our custom Web API controllers, and we've seen how this is affecting our development experience. And we can easily debug this when it's in the cloud. Attaching to the IIS instance running in Azure, it's truly making the debugging experience much more pleasant. And offline data lets us cater for all these different connectivity patterns. If we have users always online, always offline, doesn't matter. We want to cater for all of them. We want everyone to buy and use our applications. And we have a wide range of supported stores. We have SQL Server, Table Store, and MongoDB. And synchronization problems are both fun and pretty easy to handle now with mobile services help. So the next time I'm on my road trip, which will be in a couple of months, I really hope that US developers have incorporated the ideas of taking data offline and giving us a first-class experience when we're not on our 100 megabit connection. So in case you missed the universal application talk yesterday by Lars, check that out on Channel 9 when that's published. And later this afternoon, Jordan Knight has a talk on auth. So I really suggest you take a look at that. And all the code samples and all that will be hosted on GitHub. So head over to my GitHub page and check that out. And there's a few related resources that you can check out on Channel 9. There's a bunch of good data on offline data and using Azure Mobile Services and with the .NET backend. So thank you so much for coming to this talk. I really appreciate talking to you about this. And if you have any questions at all, please feel free to come up after the talk and ask me any questions you like. Thanks.